Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.
It's 9:35, 25 before 10. We're spending an hour talking about Bayou Steel, because when something like this happens, I try to put myself into the shoes of those people, right? And I would just wonder where I would go or what I would do if I were to show up tomorrow and they'd say, look, guys, can't help you. We shut the radio stations down. We're losing money. We're not. But if that were to happen, and I would ask you, the audience, if that were to happen to you, where would you go? What would you do? Look at how much debt you have, mortgage, etc. All of a sudden, boom, it's gone. Walter Dublane joins us now, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, UNO. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning.
Thanks for taking the time with us.
I just said glad to be here.
When it comes to the effect of something like this on a community, there is a ripple effect, is there not, that it's not only about the people that work there, but it could extend to mortgages, banks, et cetera, and tax base?
Yes, economists call that the multiplier effect, that whenever you look at direct jobs of, a new business, in this case a business closing, you have the certain amount of funds that they're getting. But all of those people, you know, buy groceries, go out to eat, shop, buy clothes, stuff like that. So that multiplier effect can often be on the order to 2 to 3 times as much as the original of the amount. You take the total amount of wages lost, and if you want to know the impact on the community, that gets multiplied by a factor, depends on a couple of things, but of 2 to 3 times as much.
So when it comes to recovering from something like this, if for whatever reason, and I asked President Natalie Rowbottom if there were plans underway, and she said yes, to try to work with Bayou Steel to somehow rehabilitate that facility, keep it in commerce, bring somebody else in, how likely is something like that to happen in terms of, and I know each case is specific, but in terms of history, what does history tell us about this?
Well, I mean, we can look at Avondale Shipyards as a good example, is that, which was a much bigger closing than this one, in terms of the effect on the community. And again, they're just now, it's been several years now, and they're just now, you know, trying to get around to doing something out there, and it's not going to be anywhere near the magnitude of what they lost. The other thing is, today's newspaper in the business section had a headline that says that in the entire U.S., the manufacturing output is at a low for the whole decade. So this may just be a local, indication of something that's happening nationally, which means there's the chances of doing. I mean, not that we can't rehabilitate that facility or find something to go in there that would do a partial recovery. We're not going to get that number of jobs back. I just don't see that happening.
So what are the conditions that made that happen, Dub, nationwide and I guess here too?
Well, again, what's interesting again about this one is that a lot of people are blaming the Trump trade war. And what's strange about it is because part of the trade war is that he's put tariffs on steel, particularly to protect the U.S. steel industry. So the fact that our local steel firm is going out of business seems strange, because they're the ones that are supposed to be protected. I did find, I think, a little more information that helps me explain that, which is also what Trump doesn't seem to understand in the trade thing in general, is that, like, this is the Bayou Steel does recycling, basically, and a lot of the scrap metals that they get come from abroad. So even though the steel is protected, their inputs are being taxed. So they've been hit by it by the trade war as well. So that's one of the I think, contributing explanations to what's happening here. But the article in the paper was saying that this is, and again, steel companies are still having problems because automobile companies are cutting back, and so they're not buying the steel. And then automobile companies are cutting back partly because their suppliers, they're having to pay higher taxes on a lot of the stuff they get from, and the prices are going up, and so they're cutting back, so they're not buying as much steel. So even the tariffs that are supposed to help the steel industry is not doing all that good. And part of it is uncertainty. Whenever the tariffs, if you just listen to the paper, we're going to do more tariffs this week. Oh no, we're going to pull them back. Oh, we have a deal. No, we don't have a deal. All that uncertainty always causes businesses to slow down, stop hiring, stop expanding. So we see a lot of uncertainty out there.
Right, let's take a break. When we come back, got a couple of more questions for you. And if you all have any, you can text them to 87870, and I will pass them along to Walter Dublane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, UNO. And we're talking about the closing of Bayou Steel in St. John the Baptist Parish. Back in a flash, WWL. 9:46, 14 before 10, a Newell Normand. Somebody texted in here, I worked for McDermott Inc. in Amelia, Louisiana for 37 years. When they closed the yard and moved it to Mexico, I was in my late 50s and I was in shock for about 2 months. Dublane's our guest, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, UNO. And I'm looking at the Industry Week here, Dub, and it says Bayou Steel Group filed for bankruptcy in Delaware, Chapter 11 protection, and they're closing the plant not only in St. John the Baptist Parish, but also in Tennessee. And I know sometimes companies are subsidiaries of other companies. Is Bayou Steel going to survive this, or are they just waving a white flag and saying, you know what, this is not a viable business anymore, so we're going to just go out of business?
It looks like they're going out of business. And I think one of the things that may have contributed to that is a couple of years ago, the people that basically ran the steel company sold it to a private equity company. Now there's some that are better than others, but what private equity companies often do is when they buy a company, they're interested very much in short-term type of gains. And so what they do is they actually buy the company, they borrow money against the assets of the company, which increases the leverage. I don't know if this has specifically happened with Bayou Steel. I know this is a common pattern. When I was looking at who the ownership was and where they came from, I think this may be related. When they buy the company, they borrow a whole lot of money. Well, if you're a company that has a lot of debt, then if there's some business reversals, then it makes it very hard for you to survive that, as opposed to if most of your assets are in equity, that is the stockholders, they can take a bigger hit than the bondholders can. They're going to ask for their money back. And so I think that may have contributed to this whole thing, is that when the private equity company took it over, if the company that was mainly a steel company had owned it, they might have been able to hold on longer. So I'm not sure of that, but my guess is that's part of what's happening here.
But I think the president sometimes, and all of us, like to, we'll see these movies from the 50s, because I didn't live that, but for people that did, and mom's wearing pearls and everything's very nice, and they go to the factory and they make the steel or the airplanes or what have you. But in terms of manufacturing, for the most part, it is a different day in America, is it not, in terms of that ever coming back?
Yes, and most of that, although actually Bayou Steel, of the different steel mills, the ones that are mostly having trouble are the big ones. This was more of a boutique mill that really should have an advantage in the current economy, so I don't know particularly what's going on with them. But again, as I say, manufacturing is down across the country, and Trump is blaming most of that on trade. Most analysts believe the vast majority of what's happening in manufacturing is just it's being replaced by, again, by robots. Mm-hmm. That's where manufacturing jobs are going away for that reason. So we're it is going abroad to where there's cheaper labor, which is partly due to the unions and a lot of other things. But it's a national current. We are at our manufacturing output is at a 10-year low this month.
Dub, what I'm asking before our time runs out. Yeah. For the people that, and I think there is a sea of people that are used to working in factories, used to working in manufacturing. They're 40-something years old. They don't have the technical skills to go do something else. Whether legal or not, companies are not going to bring on somebody that's 40 years old that may have a hard time, and I'm not trying to generalize, but may have a hard time grasping the latest technology, which is going to change again in a month. So my fear is that there are a whole group of people that are going to wind up between a squad, because the manufacturing jobs are going to go away. They're not going to have anywhere to go, or do they, for those group of people?
Well, again, that's something where the local politicians need to get involved, is on working on retraining, because there really are lots of jobs out there. We have very low unemployment rate, higher in New Orleans and most in Louisiana and most places, but still historically low unemployment rate. But the problem is the skills matching. The jobs, again, do require more stuff. And I don't care if you're in your 40s or not, you may need to learn to do a little bit of computers, but it will require some retraining. Now, the good news, I think, for these people is, for instance, compared to when General Motors closed the big plant up in Ohio, that was a plant that employed thousands of people in a small town. Where are those people going to go? Mm-hmm. At least they're in a major metropolitan area where they can be assimilated over the whole city a little bit. So they're really, in some sense, in a little better shape. But again, it is a matter of they may need to go out and go back to junior college and maybe retrain a little bit and get some more skills, because manufacturing jobs just aren't there right now.
Thank you, Walter. Anything you want to add?
No, I think that should do it.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time.
Right.
Walter Dublane, Associate Professor of Economics and Finance at my alma mater, UNO. I'll say it every time. Clancy Dubose originally said it, and I'll repeat it, that UNO built the middle class of New Orleans. Coming back, finding out what Newell Norman has on the way, who is, by the way, a UNO graduate.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time: baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it, with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.